This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this edition of the program. And the winner is Recep Tayyip Erdogan. In Turkey's runoff presidential election on Sunday, May 28, opposition hopes of ousting Erdogan and electing CHP leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu were dashed. There was no stunning upset to be had. Incumbent President Erdogan prevailed with a 52-48 margin of victory at the ballot box. Nonetheless, Europe, the United States, and the Turkish opposition remained deeply concerned about many of Erdogan's domestic and international positions because he shows no sign of adjusting his controversial economic or foreign policies, despite the fact that the opposition came close to removing him from power. The West is worried that Ankara, under another five-year mandate for Erdogan, may not realign its response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine with those of its NATO allies. On the other hand, the completion of the 2023 Turkish election process allays the international community's concerns and the Turkish electorate about Turkey's political instability, even as it raises questions about Ankara's future policies. So what does Erdogan's election to another five-year term portend for the political, social, and economic future of this pivotal Muslim-majority NATO country? Erdogan's entry into a third decade of power will have far-reaching implications for the stability of the region and the globe, as well as the future of democracy in Turkey. For more on the myriad implications of the presidential runoff elections in Turkey, we turn to our two expert regional analysts. Mustafa Akyol is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute in Washington and the author of many books, including Why, as a Muslim, I Defend Liberty, and Merve Tahiroğlu. She is the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy. That's a Washington-based research and advocacy nonprofit dedicated to democracy and human rights in the Middle East. And both panelists return to these microphones, and they join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Carol. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us, Carol.
Let's start with you, Mustafa Akyol. After the first inconclusive round on May 14, you predicted at these microphones that Erdogan would prevail in the end, and he did on May 28. Your reactions and thoughts about the actual results, which have now confirmed your prediction.
The results are not surprising. Erdogan again got something like 52% of the votes, which is not too different from 2017 or 2014 or 2011, because the voting patterns in Turkey have been very solidified based on cultural, ideological battle lines. And there's a chunk of the population who really see Erdogan as their great historical savior, and they will vote for him no matter what. If the economy isn't going well, yeah, they may complain about it, but they will not going to change their line. They will still vote for the reis, or, you know, the chief, as he's called. So it's like a larger-than-life figure. That's how Erdogan has become for roughly half of the population. And of course, for the other half, he's a scary figure. And his victories depress them, and the country looks growingly unsafe. And of course, that's the fundamental problem with Turkish democracy, where half of the country feels delighted with the election victories. The other half feels scared because there's little rule of law or freedom of speech for people who are on the opposition. People on the side of Erdogan, for them, life is good. And Erdogan solidified this with propaganda by creating this emotional bond with Turkey's, you can call it the religious right, religious conservatives, who are also nationalists. That has always been a big chunk of the electorate in Turkey. But sometimes it go in different ways. But Erdogan solidified that. And I think that shows that it's really hard to defeat Erdogan in ballots, even in the future, if he will continue. But it's been 21 years now, and he will go for five more, which will make it 26 years in power, which is astounding. I mean, nobody stood in power this long in Turkey. The longest person in power before Erdogan was Atatürk, the very founder of the country. He was there for some 15 years. But Erdogan is there, and I think the fact that he's winning elections is just a fact of Turkish life now. But what this means for future of freedom, for future of human rights, future of economic rationality in Turkey, that's the question I think we have to discuss now.
And we will discuss that. But first, Merve Tahiroğlu, You, as Mustafa, were at these microphones after the first round on May 14. Erdogan, as we said, was supposed to face the biggest test of his 20-year rule, which became increasingly authoritarian. Neither the economic nor humanitarian fallout from those earthquakes early February had any real deleterious effect that the opposition alliance thought it might have. And once again, in this May 28 runoff, the opposition fell short. Why do you think that is the case? Tell us about the mood today among the opposition in Turkey after this failure.
Thanks, Carol. I mean, I fully agree with Mustafa. This election has showed us how solidified these two blocks are and really that there is a major schism in the country. It's almost evenly split at this point between those who support Erdogan and those who fiercely hate him. This is why there's so much tension in the country. The fact that neither side is more than a comfortably 50%. That is creating a lot of tension between these two factions of the country, which really have a wildly different antithetical vision for what they want for the country, from the way it's run in terms of democracy and human rights issues to foreign policy. They have antithetical visions and they are trapped in this situation. Mustafa made a really good point. Erdogan has basically gotten the same vote percentage in the last three elections. So he's also stuck around this 52% percentile. He's not able to increase his own votes either. And the opposition is not able to increase its votes. It seems like we are at this stalemate where the country is very much evenly split. What this means is that this is a situation that's very hard to govern for Erdogan. And I think in order to be able to realize his vision for the country, he has no choice but to rule rather autocratically, because he doesn't have a 60% backing of the people. He doesn't have 70% support. He's stuck at around that 50% mark, which means he has to be repressive towards that other half in order to be able to realize his vision for the country. And that doesn't bode well, I think, for the future. And of course, the mood among opposition voters is very, very dark, very grim. I saw images of people crying Sunday, night of the election. People put a lot of stock in this election, as you mentioned, Carolyn, as we talked about, you know, last time on this show, given the economic crisis, given the devastation from the earthquake and the government's terrible, completely inadequate response to it, people really thought that this would really be the moment where Erdogan is finally voted out of power. And the fact that that didn't materialize, I think, has dashed hopes among a huge portion of the electorate that wants to see Erdogan gone, that this is even possible. So I'm not sure what this quite means for the future elections in the country, but I do expect that, for example, we might see a lower and lower participation rate in the elections moving forward.
Well, back to you.
May I add something at this point?
Sure, yes.
I also agree with everything Marve said. Just to add something to what we both agree on, while Erdogan has solidified a 50-52% of the electorate, the other half indeed is very much against Erdogan, but they are more complicated and there's more tension in that camp because they don't, first of all, have their own charismatic leader. I mean, in this election, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu became the opposition leader, but he's not Erdogan and everybody knows that. And some people liked him, some people didn't. And the other problem is in this opposition half of the country, there are also irreconcilable differences. There's the Kurdish left, Kurdish nationalists, and then there are hardcore Turkish nationalists who hate the Kurdish camp more than maybe sometimes they hate the other side. So Erdogan, while he controls a little more than half of the population's loyalty, he also has the advantage of having that as a solid block. Whereas in the opposition, it's very hard to dance around all these complexities on the other side. You don't have a charismatic leader and you have all sorts of different opinions which come to conflict with each other, which we've seen during this election term. So it's an interesting political experiment in how a solidified majority is dominating an electoral system with an autocratic and charismatic leader. And we'll have five more years of that. It'll be interesting to watch.
It'll be interesting to watch. But what you're saying, too, resonates with regard to other countries. You see this in many countries. The liberal or the opposition is divided, and therefore they inherently are weaker. You know, look at Venezuela, even in our own country here in the United States.
Hungary as well.
Same thing in Hungary. Every time you have, whether a charismatic or just a pure autocratic leader, it's very, very difficult for the opposition, notwithstanding the support it still does command with at least half of the population. So this is the unfortunate advantage of autocrats. Back to that question of what you raised earlier, Mustafa, which is we're going to see perhaps even more lack of rule of law, freedom of speech under Erdogan. What do you expect now? Will he double down on these very autocratic policies? Does the opposition, notwithstanding its differences, you know, have any type of leverage? What do you see happening over the next few years?
Very good question. Very hard to know because it all depends on how Erdogan thinks and feels on a given day, right? So he may go to one direction and then he may change course. But I think one thing that may happen is, at least in the economic field, he seems to be heading towards a more rational, reasonable course. Because one thing Erdogan did in the past 5 years is that he had this very eccentric theory about how the interest rates and inflation, you know, work. He believes in lowering the interest rates of the national currency, that's the lira, and hoping that this will always do wonders to the economy and will even lower the inflation, which is, of course, the exact opposite of what economists told him. And because of his actually insistence on this policy, which he imposed on the central bank, the Turkish lira had a dramatic fall. It lost its value dramatically in the past 5 years. And that led to incredible inflation, actually. Now, Erdogan has this trait to pursue a ideological, ambitious route for a while, and then take a U-turn. Sometimes he comes back to his more normal senses. We've seen that in the foreign policy. Now, there are reports in Turkey these days saying that he will do that with the economy. He will bring Mehmet Şimşek, who was the rational manager of the Turkish economy before Erdogan sacked him, you know, about 5 years ago. But now he's bringing back, and Mehmet Şimşek is the sign of stability and more market-oriented, rational economy. If he does that, that will be a sign of some positive change. But whether things will change in human rights or freedom of speech, I don't expect things to get better. If we're lucky, things will not get worse. Can they get worse? That's also possible. One also possible concern is that people on the side of the opposition who are vocal, journalists, people who are still trying to survive as the editor of a blog or a website that is critical of the government despite all the intimidation, those people may ultimately start to give up. Because in Turkey, if you're a journalist, if you're an intellectual, if you're an academic, there are two paths ahead of you, basically. You're either with Erdogan and then life is great for you. You have great resources. You will be a first-class citizen. If you're a vocal opposition figure, life doesn't look good for you. The future looks bleak. And people had a hope that this would change finally. No, it doesn't. So I would worry that free speech in terms of vocal opposition to the government may become less and less common because people are becoming less future about whether they can change anything with that and whether they're harming themselves by speaking out.
So over to you, Merve. Do you expect a possible U-turn on the economic plane, a more rational, reasonable course by Erdogan, but also not much good news in terms of human rights, freedom of speech, and so forth?
So I unfortunately have a bit more cynical view than Mustafa does in terms of what Erdogan could do, but I agree in terms of people in the opposition camp giving up, which is my biggest fear moving forward. But yeah, I think the idea that Erdogan is trying to bring this man, Mehmet Şimşek, and that will portray an image that maybe he's trying to revert back to a more orthodox understanding of economics, perhaps raise interest rates. I see this as a window dressing. At the end of the day, Mehmet Şimşek will not be able to do anything that he wants to do without Erdogan's approval. So unless Erdogan has truly changed his mind, let's remember that he campaigned on keeping the interest rates low. He has had, in his previous administration, very rational, very capable governors of the central bank. And the moment these people implemented policies that were good for the economy, but would hurt Erdogan's image, for his domestic supporters, Erdogan would just sack these people. So I don't think there's any guarantee that if Mehmet Şimşek starts doing the right things in the economy, he simply won't get fired. I think he's using this in order to calm down the markets right now, which is reacting very strongly to an Erdogan victory, and the economy could really go into a massive crisis, worse crisis than it already is. I think he's trying to prevent that by creating an image that he might change on the economic front, but I think this is window dressing, and at the end of the day, I don't know that he's capable of making that U-turn in the same way that he has in the foreign policy front, but for the sake of Turkish people, I truly hope that he does. In terms of political freedoms and human rights and, you know, democracy, I think it's going to be terrible. Far from, Mustafa said, in the best case, maybe things won't get worse. I think it's almost a guarantee that they will get worse. I can see even more political prisoners in the upcoming months. I think they are going to jail the mayor of Istanbul, who already has a jail sentence that wasn't verified. So that's why he was able to stay outside of prison so far, but he has been convicted. I think it's a matter of time at this point for him to go to jail. Turkey is facing municipal elections in 9 months. I think one of the things Erdogan is going to try to do at that point is to jail the Istanbul mayor and therefore take back control of Istanbul, the biggest city in Turkey, with all of its resources. I think the people around the Istanbul mayor, who played a huge role in the opposition's campaign in this election, are likely to also go to jail or face convictions. Journalists already, we're seeing, I think, about 7 opposition-leaning independent news channels have already come under investigation by Turkey's state broadcast regulator. I think they are going to face lots of fines, maybe even shutdowns. It's only going to get worse. We're only going to see more political prisoners moving forward. This might cause academics, civil society leaders, and journalists to give up the fight moving forward. And I think that would be the worst thing for Turkey.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Mustafa Akyol, senior fellow at the Cato Institute here in Washington, and Merve Tahiroğlu, from whom you just heard, the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy. We're discussing the results of the Turkish presidential runoff, which returned Recep Tayyip Erdogan to another 5-year term in power. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, in the very few minutes we have left, Mustafa Akyol, let's turn to now the international implications. And we need to discuss whether Erdogan, now having survived a serious election challenge, will shift his policies on regional or international global issues, such as his opposition or original opposition to Swedish accession to NATO. And here's a quick question you can easily answer. Is there any hope that Turkey would revive its interest in becoming a member of the European Union, which was, of course, a desire of opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu?
Regarding foreign policy, I think I'm afraid. I mean, I've been a supporter of Turkey's European Union accession process, Carol, but I think as long as there's Erdogan, you know, controlling Turkey, there's not much chance for that. There's no spirit for that. And I don't think Erdogan would want to be constrained by European standards of free speech or rule of law or limited government or, you know, other standards of liberal democracy. And Europe doesn't have much heart for him, too. Erdogan's approach to the West in the past 10 years has become very clearly transactional. What are we getting out of this, right? I mean, we're NATO, that's fine, but also we will make bargains with Russia if we want to accept Sweden's entrance. But what do we get in return? I think that transactional approach will continue. And I think it maybe makes sense for Western capitals to make some transactional deals with Turkey for whatever the important interests are. But I would only encourage those transactional dealings to include an insistence on the minimum standards of human rights in Turkey. I think that should be something that should not be sacrificed. Because if that's gone too, Turkey will further drift away from Western liberal democracies into the club of Russia and China. Because let's not forget, there will be a post-Erdogan era at some point. I don't know when, but there will be. And nobody will be that charismatic after Erdogan to keep the same system going. So there might be a chance chance of restoration after that. I think we should still all invest in that future of a chance for restoring some kind of democracy in Turkey.
Merve Tahiroğlu, what is your sense of the international implications of Erdogan's return to power, particularly with regard to NATO, Swedish accession, and other important matters, Ukraine, Russia?
I fully agree with Mustafa. Erdogan wants a completely transactional relationship with NATO partners in the West, and we're already seeing signs of that. My worry in terms of Sweden's accession, so in the phone call that US President Biden made to Erdogan to congratulate him on this victory, it was very clear what the transaction between these two countries are about. Erdogan said, how is the F-16 sale going? He wants to buy F-16s from the United States, and the United States has been basically stalling that, I think, until after the election. So Erdogan said, how is your efforts towards selling us these F-16s going? And Biden responded saying, how is Sweden's accession going? We're looking forward to that. So basically, this is the transaction that these two leaders are trying to make right now. NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg is expected to come to Ankara and attend Erdogan's inauguration. They are trying to get Turkey to make the right decision. I think they're expecting Turkey to finally remove its veto for Sweden's accession before the next NATO meeting in July. I'm not sure if that will happen before July, but it could happen in the next few months. I think Erdogan is willing to make this happen. But like Mustafa said, he's looking for certain concessions from NATO partners. If he's going to do this, he wants to get something in return. My worry is that NATO partners, including the United States, is no longer really looking at their relationship with Turkey in terms of the long-term picture. They're looking at it from a very short-term picture, and they have acceded to this transactional relationship. You know, I fully agree with Mustafa. Policymakers in the West need to be thinking long-term. Erdogan at some point will leave. There will be some sort of restoration in Turkey. What will happen to our relationship then? But I'm worried that they are thinking too short-term at this point, and they are going to engage in this. They know that Erdogan is going to be around for the next 5 years, and they're willing to engage in this transactional relationship. So it is possible for Erdogan to allow Sweden accession, but does that portend a positive relationship between Turkey and NATO moving forward? I don't think so. It's just going to continue to be a problematic relationship whereby Turkey will follow NATO's line as long as Erdogan can get something in return.
As we close, very briefly, anything you'd like to add, Mustafa Akyol, whether it has to do with Syrian refugees in Turkey and what will be their fate in terms of the fact that Erdogan, as opposition leader Kılıçdaroğlu, wanted to do is return them to Syria, but Syria under the autocrat and dictator Bashar al-Assad is very dangerous for these refugees, and any other issue in the region that you think is critical?
Well, if there's one silver lining to this victory of Erdogan, these elections, it is that probably Syrian refugees in Turkey and also migrants from places like Afghanistan or Pakistan, they will feel safer in Turkey because both parties, actually there's anti-refugee, anti-immigrant sentiment all across Turkey, unfortunately. And AKP also has been promising to send them back to some extent. But the opposition was more vocal and even intimidating about that. And Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, despite a brighter campaign he led between these two rounds in the 15 days, he bought into this far-right narrative about that. And I wasn't surprised to see Syrian refugees in Turkey celebrating Erdogan's victory because they will be probably safer in a Turkey like that. That is one thing about Erdogan. I mean, populist leaders are generally seen as anti-immigrant. In Turkey, that's not exactly the case with Erdogan. But I think that idea that populist leaders are anti-immigrant should be qualified a bit. They're anti-immigrant when the immigrants are not their people, quote unquote, when they come from a different culture or civilization or religion. Viktor Orban, for example, has been very against Muslim refugees, but he's been welcoming to Ukrainian refugees. I think for Erdogan, people from Syria or Central Asia, these are Muslim peoples with more conservative values. So he sees them as a part of his broader sense of a nation that goes beyond the national boundaries. That is a plus. But also we've seen that Erdogan used the immigrant hand card against Europe at times, saying that we will open the gates and let them go if Europe doesn't give us what we do. So like on many other issues, on this issue too, I think he will use it as a bargaining chip as well.
And Merve, you get the last word with respect to the Syrian refugees.
Yeah, with the Syrian refugees, because they are the majority of the refugees in Turkey or the migrants in Turkey. So I think this is easy. Whatever politicians have been promising every time there are elections, it's near impossible for any Turkish government to send back Syrian refugees to Syria. Not only is that going to be logistically very difficult, even if Turkey decides to re-recognize the Assad regime and make peace, these refugees are not going to want to return voluntarily to living under that regime. And I don't think Assad wants them either. So maybe some refugees could return in certain scenarios, but it is impossible. Turkish leaders need to come to grips with the fact that these people are here to stay, and I believe they need to be given citizenship as quickly as possible in order to integrate into Turkish society. Maybe that can help dampen this huge rising anti-migrant sentiment and xenophobia among Turkish citizens as well.
Well, on that relatively optimistic note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I would like to thank my terrific guest, Mustafa Akyol, Senior Fellow at the Cato Institute, and Merve Taheroğlu. She's the Turkey Program Director at the Project on Middle East Democracy. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.